Hey, what is up, everybody? This is Rob Rivera.
And this is Rob Rucha.
And you're listening to the Robcast Podcast.
All right. Hello, sir.
How you doing?
Good.
Excited. I'm back in the studio after three fucking months.
This is our socially distanced. We are 6 feet apart.
We are.
Yep. We are six feet apart. No masks because we've got microphones in front of our faces. But I'm going to wash the pop filters when we're done with hand sanitizer or alcohol.
Yep. So we're on episode 8.
Yeah, episode 8 of third season.
Yeah, and we have an amazing guest today, Mr. Don Jameson. And
yeah, changing it up a bit.
What's that?
Changing it up a bit.
Yeah, we've had a baseball player.
Yeah.
This season, and now we have a comedian.
We've had merchandise guys. We've had entrepreneurs.
So, for those who don't know, Don was one of the hosts of That Metal Show, along with Jim Florentine and Eddie Trunk.
On VH1.
On VH1. 14 seasons he was on there.
Yeah.
So, we have an incredible conversation with him. So, definitely get your ears ready.
Yeah. Let's call him.
Yeah.
Hello.
Don, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Rob. Good to hear from you, man.
How is everything on the East Coast land for you?
Well, we got the weather now, so yeah, it's been good, man. I live down by the beach, so I'm out every day on my bike, and definitely need a little sunshine in my life these days.
I hear you, man. I have my partner here, also named Rob.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. How's it going?
All right, hanging in like everybody.
So, I mean, let's get right to it, man. Obviously, you know, the last 3 months have been nothing but insanity. And I wonder, this is the first time I've been up to the studio since this whole, we were here a couple months back doing some stuff. But I have not been out of the house. I have not been out of a 4 mile radius from where I live. So how have you been dealing with the pandemic?
Well, man, I always tell people joking around, like, you know, the great thing about doing comedy is I save a lot of money on therapy.
Yeah.
You know, because I get to go and take out all my rage on audiences every night. But now I'm really seeing that it's true, man. I mean, I'm just like, I need a stage to rage on, just like, you know, just like you do and just like all the musicians do. So that's been the toughest part, man. You know, financially, yeah, it sucks, but it's even worse, man. Cause like I'll go, my folks live near me in Jersey and I'll go visit them during the week, make sure, you know, they're good. Cause you know, they're older and, you know, I'm down there and I'm like a raving lunatic for like the first half hour that I'm there. And then it's like, you got that off your chest now? I go, yeah, you're going to be my audience for the next, you know, 3 or 4 months so we can get going again. So,
are you using your parents to practice your material on?
I'm just taking out all my anger on them. So, elder abuse is the way I've been dealing with the pandemic, apparently. Yeah.
So I've been looking through your Wikipedia. I did some research here and, there was a couple things I did not know. I mean, I'm not very familiar with your comedy career. And right here it says you spent many years as Andrew Dice Clay's opening act.
Yeah, man, I did 10 years with Dice, and you know, I like tons of different comics, and that's another thing. You know, if you want to tie it back to your first question, how I've been getting through the pandemic. Well, obviously, you know, a lot of music, but I also dug out a lot of my old comedy CDs, man. And, you know, so some of my old Dice CDs, Carlin, Pryor, Kinison, even the Jerky Boys, Woody Allen, like I just been listening to everything. So that's been cool. But yeah, Dice is the guy, you know, as somebody who was thinking about doing stand up, he was the guy that made me want to do it, because he's not just a comic, he's a rock star on stage. You know, he's got the whole image with the leather jacket.
Absolutely.
And all that stuff. So, yeah, that's what really made me want to do it. And then, sure enough, my buddy Jim Norton started, he met him in Los Angeles. He started opening for him. And then Norton's career started getting big, so he couldn't do shows. He passed him on to my other buddy, Jim Florentine. And then when Jim couldn't do shows, like, I was the next in line. And, you know, I had already been kind of hanging out with Dice. And I told him, I go, I'm going to be your next opener. He's like, yeah, we'll see, kid. And next thing you know, I did 10 years with the guy, man.
So how was it touring with him? How is he, like, is he the same way on stage, like, off stage? Because, I mean, I've never met him. So I just, like, I would, like, always think if I ever met this guy, he would probably just crack on me right then and there, you know, like... So how is he as a person?
Oh, dude, we always said when we went out and toured to be like it's this is great that we're out, you know, doing dates together, but like the shows are really getting in the way of us just hanging out and having fun. You know? It's like touring in a band. It's like, you know, if you like the people you're with, you're like, we got to go do the show now. Like, we're having so much fun together. And that's what it would be like, man. He's just a big goofball, you know, and we just bust on each other and play pranks on people and phony phone calls to people. Like, you know, yeah, he's one of the biggest comics of all time, but, you know, he's like any other comic. He's got the mind of a 12-year-old.
Yeah. So getting into the, you know, the comedy, like, now we know that Dice was the guy, like, that got you into that. Now, when it comes to metal, and I ask this to everybody that I interview, who was the band? What was the one band that you said, you know what, I love this. This is what I identify with. Like, obviously, with Eddie Trunk, I think it's UFO, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's an early one, but maybe, like Heaven and Hell, Sabbath, Heaven and Hell was probably, like, the one that just blew his whole mind out.
Okay. Now, as far as you go, like, what was the record or the band that just blew you away the first time?
It was, dude, I came right out of the gate swinging, man, and I don't even remember how, but I guess I must have saw a commercial for it and just was, like, drawn to the image, but it was Kiss, Destroyer, man. Yeah. That's the gateway drug right there. It's when you're 11 or whatever, you know, they're superheroes, they're rock stars, they're comic book heroes, like, what's better than that? I didn't think I'd ever like another band after Kiss. I probably only listened to that album for like a year.
Okay. So, yeah, Kiss seems to be, I mean, from the, a lot of us old schoolers, you know, seems to be the band that a lot of these musicians like Anthrax are very, like, the band that always waves the Kiss flag. You know, like, there's a lot of bands that, you know, I'm not surprised by your answer, you know, because it just seems that that band really made everyone either pick up an instrument or up their live show.
Yeah, man. Exactly. I mean, you got you know, Dimebag Darrell, man, may he rest in peace. You know, he had Ace Frehley tattooed on his chest, man. You know, John Five, you know, who plays Rob Zombie, he's got, like, the largest collection of Kiss memorabilia in the world. So, you know, and he worships Ace Frehley, but obviously, you know, like, John is a much more accomplished guitar player now, but he's, to him, Ace is still the greatest, you know. Yeah. And he, to me too, you know, that's, you know, anytime I put that album on, I'm 11 again.
Yeah, like, I just recently busted out my vinyl of the Ace solo record. That's one of the best. And you can tell that where a lot of the Kiss music came from, you know, and it came, if I'm not mistaken, it came a lot from the Ace side. And that record is just still, like, Rip It Out and New York Groove, all those songs, that cover was amazing. And I think it's still one of the most, maybe, underrated records. It was the best of the four. I mean, I listened to all four. That was my favorite of the four.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, there's not a dull moment on that record. And yeah, man, that's, you know, bro. You're in a long running band now for a while, and it's, you know, a band is, you know, it's more than just the sum of its parts. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you take one ingredient out and it's not the same, you know. I still go see Kiss without Ace, you know, and I've done it over the years. You know, it's just different, you know, but you see what happens when you take an original contributor out like that. And because you could see the songwriting was so strong from him, especially back then. So, you know, those guys yelled at Ace for, you know, for being an F up, you know, and boozing and drugging his way out of the band. But I defy you to go on YouTube and go down a Kiss rabbit hole of live stuff from back then. Man, Ace is always on point.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it's live. That band was definitely a force to be reckoned with. You know, like they definitely had that down. And I mean, every single, like you said, every single part of that band was integral. Now, to me personally, when Eric Carr joined, I was completely floored because I think to me personally, as a drummer, the drumming just elevated so huge. To me, like that Creatures of the Night album, just, I mean, it's just mind blowing. And I think Ace played on that record, correct?
He played on a couple of the tracks, but then there was, yeah, there's like 9 different guitar players on that album, Mitch Weissman and a bunch of other people. But dude, you're spot on, bro. Like the drums on that album are so, they're like, it's like thunder, man. And Eric's playing is just so great on there. And then it was weird because then on when they did Lick It Up, like, They tuned the drums down. They took it down like another half notch for whatever reason. But man, I tell you, those drums, I won't say they single-handedly brought Kiss back from the dead, but pretty close.
I agree. I mean, I only saw Kiss live once in my lifetime, and it was without makeup, and Bruce Kulick was in the band. But I lived in Puerto Rico at the time. I don't remember if they were on Animalize or Asylum. I'm not really sure, but I think
Bruce, Asylum.
Okay, so Eric Carr, just his, not only was his drum set huge, which was amazing, it always looked like a tank back there. Yeah. But he had like these electronic pads where he had guitar sounds on them. It sounded like a guitar, and his drum solo was absolutely mind-blowing. Definitely one of my favorite drummers, you know, ever, because of how solid he hit, you know. And was there like any albums, let's say, like non-makeup that you really got into?
The non-makeup? Yeah, you know, I just, you know, I'm doing a video cast now called That Jameson Show, and I just had Bruce Kulick on my show, and it was so cool to talk about the non-makeup years of Kiss, because I think there's some cool stuff in there, man. I thought Lick It Up was great. I thought Asylum was great. I thought Animalize was great. You know, I liked Revenge a lot, you know, but I kind of, Kiss lost me a little bit in the 90s. But yeah, man, those early, you know, records. I remember watching MTV, dude, when they did the unmasking on TV where you saw him for the first time, man.
Yes. That was with Vinnie Vincent, right?
That was with Vinny. Yeah, absolutely. So
you know what? And the funny thing is, when I saw Gene Simmons' face, I was like, "Yeah, I'm not surprised." I mean, he looked even demon like without the makeup. But yeah, there was that one song. I think it was called Unholy. Was that on Revenge?
I thought
that was one of the best Kiss songs ever.
That's a banger, yeah, man. That's a great one. And the other one off of that one that I like is Domino, which is really cool. So both Gene songs.
Yeah. So now moving forward, I've seen like the past couple years you have done touring with bands like Pop Evil, and I think you went out. Did you go with Black Label or was it Saxon?
No, it was I went out with Zach, but he was doing Zach Sabbath.
Oh, Zach Sabbath. So. How did that come about? Like I had never seen actually a comedian out with a rock or metal band. So how did that like come about? How did that work out?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what every comic asks me when they see me like out in a comedy club. Like, why would you do that? Like, because those are my people, man. You know, this is the music that I've always loved, right? And when we started doing that metal show, you know, Metallica did a festival, their own festival, Orion Fest in Atlantic City, and they asked myself and Jim Florentine and Jim Brewer to come down and do, like, you know, a comedy stage. And that was the start of it, man. You know, and that whole situation was crazy, man, because, like, here I am, like, on a Saturday playing in front of thousands and thousands of Metallica fans, right? And Lars comes down and introduces me to the crowd. Halfway through my set, I see James like come and sit like on one of the amps on the side of the stage. Like, I'm freaking out, man. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, I'm doing good with the crowd. And then the following Thursday, I played a pizza place in North Jersey. Like, That's showbiz right there. That'll tell you everything.
Hey, whatever pays the bills, right?
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, I already had these gigs booked. So after that, yeah, man, it just spiraled, man. You know, Twisted Sister asked me to open, and then the tour started. You know, I went out with Faster Pussycat and Hookers and Blow, and, you know, we did Pop Evil and Zach Sabbath, Anvil. And, you know, I look at it like in the late 80s, like, that was a cool thing for a comic to open for a band. Like, Dice opened for Guns N' Roses at the Rose Bowl.
Oh, I didn't know
Hollywood.
That. Wow.
Yeah, like, in front of 90,000 people.
Jesus.
You know, Kinnison, you know, he always mixed it, like, with the Wild. Remember the Wild Thing video with Slash and all the Sunset Strip guys? And then, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait used to go out and open for bands. He opened for Nirvana on their first U.S. tour. So it was cool for a comic to do that.
I was not aware. I thought you were actually the first one to ever do this.
No, but then it was not cool for like 25 years.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, you know, I like to, you know, I don't know if I'll make it cool again, but I like to do this because I have so much material about this kind of music and all these bands and stuff like that, that I can't do in front of a regular crowd. I mean, I still play the comedy clubs, of course, but, you know, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to get, you know, jokes about like Gwar.
Yeah, true. So I have my partner here, Hatchley, has a question for you. Go ahead, Mr. Rock.
So I'm a big, like, I'm a recording engineer, and I'm a big fan of comedy albums. And I've noticed you've got quite a few comedy albums, but they're all on Metal Blade, which to me is kind of really bizarre to see a comedian on Metal Blade. I mean, how did that come about?
Yeah, thanks, Rob, because that's such an important part of what I do, which is, you know, when the technology finally got to a point where comics could just make their own CDs at home, or, you know, could get them manufactured for cheap for like 50 cents a piece, and they could do their own artwork on their computer, every comic put out a comedy album.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I could do it, but it's like just to do it. I just always, whenever I get into something, man, I always look for the combo platter. Like, what could I do to make mine a little different or just special maybe to me, you know? And I was out on the road with this band called Charred Walls of the Damned, a Metal Blade band. And Brian Slagle, you know, who owns Metal Blade, came to a couple of the shows. And after one of them, he was like, hey, man, I mean, I don't know if you have like enough for a whole album or whatever, but you know, I don't know, maybe we could do an album together. Because he saw this guy out opening for this heavy band all over America and, you know, doing good with the crowd. And honestly, man, I thought he was BSing me, man.
Yeah.
So I didn't even give him an answer because I'm thinking, like, I've been listening to Metal Blade records since, you know, I'm a teenager. Like,
totally.
This has got to be a joke. So, like, a year later, he hires me to perform at this metal, like, summit thing he was doing down in Palm Springs. And he picks me up at the airport, and we're driving. And he's like, I never got an answer from you on that record deal. I was like, oh, you were serious? So, like, and then less than 5 minutes later, we had a record deal. And, yeah, I just put out my fourth stand-up album with them called Denim and Laughter. And it's been a killer partnership, man.
Is it better for you when you're doing like live recording stuff as opposed to like in studio style stuff, or does it matter?
Yeah, for comedy, it's always, you know, for comedy, it's always got to be live. You know, you want to get to obviously that audience response. And and now the album's coming out next week on vinyl, which I'm super pumped about because, you know, I'm, you know, Rob, the other Rob mentioned pulling out his vinyl. You know, I've been back on a vinyl kick for the last 10 years, and one of my dreams was to put one of my records out on vinyl. So it's finally happening. Yeah, Metal Blade's, you know, been killer, man. So, you know, they send me out on tour with bands. My, you know, my regular agent puts me in the comedy clubs, and that's, you know, I split it about pretty much equally now, you know, except, of course, you know, that's not gonna happen till next year with the bands. But it's been a good, you know, collaboration.
Nice. Well, that's definitely the most unique combination I've seen as far as comedy albums go. Most of them are either independently released or major label stuff, like the Adam Sandler stuff and like big, mm-hmm. you know, major stuff. Which, I mean, oddly enough, that album, the first Adam Sandler comedy album, won a Grammy just because of the way it was done. And it wasn't live. It was, you know, sketch comedy in a way. And that was his shtick. But it really got me into engineering because of the way that those things were done. And I've done a lot of live comedy recordings, including one that was produced by Bobcat, which was really cool to see him do it from that perspective, like being the producer of the show. So I definitely see the point. I mean, it has to be live, in my opinion. It gets boring otherwise.
Well, yeah, or you could do, like, you know, Sandler's, you know, he's a great stand-up, I mean, I always loved him as a stand-up, but yeah, he used to do a lot of sketches and stuff, too, and Chris Rock does that on his albums, and, you know, Carlin used to do that on his albums, like, you'd hear, like, 10 minutes of live stand-up, and then he'd break into a, you know, a weatherman character, and then he'd go back into a stand-up, so, but I'm not talented enough to do any of that stuff. I just yell at the audience for an hour, record it, and put it out.
Well, I just downloaded Denim and Laughter, so I'm going to check it out.
Oh, cool. Thanks, man.
Yeah, and if you're ever in Chicago and you need a show recorded, my man will take care of you.
Yeah, cool. No, I mean, I'm really happy that you noticed the whole Metal Blade connection. And, yeah, that would be cool, man. We'll have to all meet up at a White Sox game, man.
Totally. Yeah, like I saw you out of nowhere. Yeah, actually, I don't know if I told Rob the story. I was at a White Sox game. And I had my buddy hooked me up with tickets. And then Don sits with Nick, right? Was it Nick?
Yeah.
Nick. And they sit just right in front of me. And I'm like, what are you doing here? It was so, the weirdest meeting, but it was cool. And I have a couple more questions, and I'll let you go on about your day. Let's talk about, obviously, I have to ask because everybody asks you. But before I get to ask the question about that metal show, Eddie Trunk, does he really get upset when somebody stumps him? Because the shows that I've seen, he looks like he gets really mad when he gets stumped.
Well, you know, I Eddie kind of, you know, he seems like the, you know, the calm, cool, you know, everyman type of dude. But I must say, you know, I can't have a really close friend unless they have a certain amount of rage in them. I find that to be a good characteristic in a friend. So yeah. He definitely has his rage, though. Yeah, comes from being, you know, when we played Stump the Trunk, he'd get nuts. And what people didn't see was like Florentine and I in the dressing room with Eddie for like just 2 hours, either like just gassing him out of the dressing room or breaking his balls, so that by the time he got on the set, he was so raw that, you know, all you had to do was drop the match and he'd flame up.
That's awesome, because I pretty much, I think I watched almost every single episode of that metal show, because I mean, I you know, it's like we came from the time when we had Headbangers Ball and Metal Mania, and then it was so cool just to have somebody talking about music that wasn't just your normal rap and pop, and, you know, and I was very upset when it was taken off the air. And that leads me down to my next question. What is the future of that? I know there's been rumors about possibly bringing back like the show. Are you guys ever try to explore like a Netflix or like a Hulu or Apple Plus, HBO, anything like that?
Hey, man, listen, I mean, first of all, you got to give us credit. I mean, we did 14 seasons, and when the show went away, we took down the whole network with us. Yeah. So we know how to get a show canceled, man. Everybody goes down with the ship. But, hey, man, listen, we don't own the name, so it's pretty much like out of our hands. But, you know, look, if you porn is interested in the show, we'll take it there. It doesn't matter to us, man, as long as we can get on the air and promote these bands, man. You know how it is, man. It's like, you know, it's so, there's no mainstream press for the kind of music that we love. There's, you know, unfortunately, Jimmy Fallon's not going to have Nonpoint on his show, even though he should. But
I agree.
You know, that's so, well, I do. And he actually, I shouldn't say that, because he is a big metalhead. So you never know, but you know what I'm saying? Like that, to me, I love the scene, man. So, and I love being a part of supporting it and being its spokesperson for, you know, so many years now, because it's in my heart, man. You know, I'm still the 11-year-old kid buying Kiss Destroyer for the first time, man. That's what it's about, man. So yeah, if the, you know, the, if the network or the producer can find a deal for us, you know, we're good to go. And, you know, we're still all three best friends. In fact, we hung out last weekend down at Eddie's beach house here in Jersey, and we did an impromptu That Metal show, just sitting in front, like out on Eddie's patio, in front of a citronella candle, and we put it up on Eddie Trunk's Facebook page, so if people want to see it, it's a little walk down memory lane.
Would you consider maybe doing it yourselves and like releasing it on like a YouTube?
The thing is, man, you know, it's still the money, you know, you still have to have the money to shoot it. Like we just did the, you know, an iPhone version,
yeah,
you know, with Eddie's son as the cameraman. So, you know, we put a 12-year-old to work to get it done. But, you know, to do it the right way, get an audience and all that and a staff and a director and cameraman and all that stuff like that, you know, you still got to put the money out for that. So, you know, again, and we need to do it with, you know, with Viacom, you know, behind us. So, you know, we'll see, man. Never say, you know how it is, man. It, you know, Guns N' Roses just did the Never in This Lifetime tour. So you could definitely never say never.
All right. Well, Don, dude, thank you so much for taking time out. You've been one guy I've wanted to talk to for a while, and you have been amazing on the show. I really appreciate it. And anytime you are in the Chicago area, please let us know. I would love to come out and, you know, show support, and maybe we can go definitely to a White Sox game together for sure. I can get those free tickets.
Hey, dude, honestly, man, I cannot wait to just go sit in a ballpark and watch a baseball game. So we will definitely do that for sure. And I'm going to text you too, man. I want to get you hop on to my show as well. And Rob number two, good talking with you as well, bro.
Thanks.
I'll do your show anytime, man. Thank you so much. You have an awesome day.
You too.
Later, bye-bye. Bro. Bye. All right. Killer conversation with Mr. Jameson. A couple things I didn't know about, especially all those years with Dice Clay. What a
10 years.
Freaking honor that would have been, huh?
I mean, that's like opening for Metallica when it comes to comedians.
Yeah, he was like back then probably one of the, wasn't he doing like Madison Square Garden?
He said 90,000 people or something, you know, Dice was playing.
He was opening up for Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, but still. Able to command a crowd.
I think Dice Clay did Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, he definitely did because he's got lots of television specials that were recorded live in large venues. And to be able to open for a band like Guns N' Roses, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah,
a crowd.
This definitely Don's been one of my favorite guests. He had answers quick. You know, it was awesome to talk to him. And
yeah, and I'm glad I asked him about Metal Blade because when I look at, you know, all his albums that are out, I'm like, Metal Blade, Metal Blade, Metal Blade. I'm like, he's been on Metal Blade for like 12 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's like
a career. That was cool of Brian Slagle to offer him a contract. I mean, Brian has also been known, you know, to branch out in different things. We actually had a release on Metal Blade. We released the Return for European purpose territory.
That's what a lot of people do. They license it out to Metal Blade out in Europe because they have bigger distribution out there.
Yeah, it was killer. Yeah. It was killer to be on Metal Blade, and I can say, hey, I was on Metal Blade. So
yeah, well, and so was Don, and then you guys ended up meeting at a Sox game. Who knew?
No, I knew him from before.
I know.
But it was weird. I was like, Don? He goes, Rob, what are you doing here? No, what are you doing here? It was cool. I actually met him in New York. We were on tour with Alter Bridge at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember this insane snowstorm, a blizzard, that I'm still shocked that show was sold out.
And people still made it?
People still made it. And
that's New York.
He came to the show with a couple friends, and that's when I met him. And we bonded immediately. We traded numbers. I mean, I bond with most people, but when they have a love of music, especially metal, I bond with you even. I'll bond with you really hardcore. But it was awesome to talk to him, and definitely to all those who have checked out all the current episodes that we've had. Rob Flynn, God, who else have we had? We've done a bunch with us. We had Elias, which is a very powerful one. I suggest anyone listening to this, if you have not listened to the Elias interview, do so. He speaks very from the heart about current events.
Open and candid conversation.
Yeah, open and candid, and definitely does not hold back on this. So thank you, everybody, for listening today, and we'll see you hopefully next week.
So let's play a track from his newest comedy album, Don Jameson. This is Alice and Ozzy and Zach Wilde.
I love going out, man. I go out and tour with bands a lot now, man. I love mixing comedy with rock music, man. Because people go, oh, no, that rock and comedy doesn't mix. I say rock and comedy mixes like Courtney Love and Crazy. You know what I'm talking about? It's a perfect fit. You know what I mean? Because some of the funniest people in the world are hard rock and metal musicians, man. I interviewed Alice Cooper many, many times, man. He always has a great, funny story. And at the end, killer punchline that'll bring the house down, man. He's sort of like the Bill Cosby of metal. You know what I'm talking about? All right, without the roofies and the bad sweaters, but you know what I'm saying. Ozzy Osbourne, same things. To this day, the king of one-liners, right? He's like the Rodney Dangerfield of heavy metal. He really is, man. He had to go to rehab a few years ago, and this guy was interviewing him. He said, do you have anything to say to Sharon before you go in? And he goes, yeah, I guess tell her, Mama, I'm not coming home. And we almost lost him, too, man. He almost died, but Sharon wouldn't let him out of his contract, so... I love touring with the bands, man. I toured with a band called Paradise Kitty, all female Guns N' Roses tribute. The singer Jenna was so much like Axl Rose, sometimes her period didn't show up on time. I almost forgot about that one, Jenna. I toured with Zakk Wylde from Ozzy's band. We all know Zakk Wylde in here, right? Remember when Zakk joined Ozzy in 1987, how blonde and beautiful he was? He looked like a chick I took to the high school prom, right? You see him now? Yeah, he looks like a guy that would abduct a chick from the high school prom. And Zach's hairy too, man. We didn't even have bunks on the bus. We all just slept in his fucking beard, man. Except for the roadies. They slept in his pubes. He's so hairy, he could be a stunt double for an Italian woman's pussy. I could end it to laugh in. I don't really give a shit. And Zakk doesn't shower, right? You guys know that about Zakk. He once went 77 days without showering. Yeah. He was going to go 78, but he didn't want to be gross. Can you imagine 77 days without showering? He must have stunk worse than a Coldplay album. And he sweats like a motherfucker on stage, man. He sweats more than a fucking suicide bomber at TSA, I'm telling you. We just played pranks on each other the whole time on the road. It was so much fun, man. Like one time, Zakk got off the bus, so I took his guitar and I hit it and he came back and he was all panicked and we laughed at him. But then he got me back hard the next day. I woke up in the morning and he had shoved a Buzz Lightyear action figure into my anal cavity. You know, fun stuff like that. And then they called me Buzz Tightrear for the rest of the tour, so.
Thanks so much for listening to the Robcast Podcast. Be sure and subscribe to get notified on future episodes. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Robcast Podcast. Feel free to send us comments and suggestions at robcastpodcast@gmail.com.